Jack Gale, legendary WTMA air personality from the mid-50s. When exactly were you at WTMA?
I would have to say, John, if I remember, it's probably 55, 56, 57. I know I left in 57 to go to Baltimore, and I assumed that it was probably about 55, sometime at 55 that I went there.
Was WTMA your first radio job?
Oh, no. Goodness gracious. I started way back in 1944. I was in Cleveland, and I had worked in Cumberland, Maryland in 1948 and then got out of radio because I got married, couldn't make any money, and got in the insurance business. And then in 1950, they called me from WTBO and said, somebody named Chuck Smith had bought that station and wanted to talk to me, had heard some stuff that when I was there 2 years before. So I called him and said, you know, I just couldn't go on the radio. I couldn't make any money, and I had twins, and there was no. And he said, well, drive over and talk to us. I was in Baltimore. And I went over there, and I think they offered me probably like $50 a week and you know, to go back there. And I said, I was making like 100 and some in the insurance business, and I would love to do it because I love radio, but I couldn't do it. So I said no, and I went back downstairs. They were over a bank building, and my wife said, you know, you really need to take it. I said, we can't get along. She said, well, we'll have to get along. Somebody will hear you someday. And I said, well, let me put it to you this way. If New York is the head and Los Angeles is the feet, you can imagine where Cumberland is. So I said, I don't think so. So anyway, she said, you know, go back up there and take. So I went back up, and I said, if you give me $52.50, I'll take it. So I did. And eventually, it took me a long, long time to get into a larger city, and I finally got into Cleveland. I was in Cleveland about 3 years, and Chuck Smith called me and said he had bought a station in Charleston, South Carolina, and offered me the program director's job. And I just had a hunch because I knew him, and I knew who he was bringing in as a sales guy. We had worked together, and I just had a hunch, and I said, I'll be there. And people said, you know, you are leaving Cleveland to go to South Carolina? Are you crazy? But it was a great move, and that were three of the greatest years. I've really had a lot of fun there, and it was terrific. I really enjoyed myself, and Chuck was a great guy, and we just had a great staff and had an awful lot of fun, and the audience was tremendous. The audience was terrific. I just have great memories of that.
Now, you were morning man, and you say you were program director, too?
Yeah. He offered me program director's job, and sometimes it wasn't the greatest thing because it was my first job in management. Yeah, I was morning in PD, and we had a young fellow there who had carried my records at Record Hops in Cleveland, and I brought him in and put him on afternoon drive. His name was Dick Drury, and I found out that he had taken an audition somewhere else. So I told him, I said, did you take an audition over there? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, we don't want that here. If you're dissatisfied, you need to get out now. And I fired, and I went down to Chuck Smith, and I was so proud of myself. And I said, this was about 11 o'clock in the morning. And I said, I just fired Dick Drury because he took an audition at another station. And Chuck says, well, that's fine. Who's going to work that shift? And I said, well, I said, you know, we'll put, you know, whoever in there. And he said, no, we can't do that because they're labor and they'll get overtime. You're management, so you don't get any overtime, so you'll have to work that shift. I said, wait a minute, I work the morning. He says, yeah, I know that. He said, but you need to learn when you fire somebody, you have to fire them at your convenience, not just on a whim. So he says, so until you get somebody else in there, you'll have to cover that because we can't pay overtime.
Oh, you had some stupid tax you paid.
Quick learn. It was a quick learn. And Dick went on later to become a big-time program director in Pittsburgh. He went on and did real well.
Now, WTMA was a top 40 radio station when you got here?
John, we didn't have top 40 then. We played, you know, Bing Crosby and Perry Como and those kind of records. It was just what we called nice popular music is what it was. I guess it was Patti Page back in those days and things like that. Nobody was playing, you know, what we call rock and roll. I did started a program called The Hound Dog on Friday or Saturday night and played that, but nobody else had ever played that kind of music there.
So tell me about The Hound Dog Show.
When I was in Cleveland, there was a guy that I'm sure you heard the name Alan Freed. I heard him playing this kind of music, Fats Domino and the Drifters, and I'd never heard that kind of music before because nobody had played it in those days. When I came to Charleston, I just started a show called The Hound Dog, and I had the sound effects of a dog howling, and the dog would howl, and I'd talk to the records. If they would sing a question, I would answer it and keep the mic on the whole time and scream, and had a beat. It was a rhythm beat. When the record stopped, this rhythm beat would take on, and I would talk in rhyme to the rhythm beat, and we had requests. People would send in cards, and I'd type them all up, and I'd read like 30, 40 names at rapid fire in between that. It was one of these shows where you could get drunk listening to it. Later on, it was in four cities when I went to Baltimore, but it really took off there. It was a terrific show, and I opened a record store called the Hound Dog Record Shop, and we sold Fats Domino, Joe Turner, those kind of people, Muddy Waters, Wilson Pickett. We sold those records in that store. It was on King Street.
So that's probably why you did the show, to make it profitable with the record store, because well, not too many morning guys would volunteer volunteer to come back and do a show late on Friday night.
Yeah, right, and all, including Dick's show from 4 to 8 until we hired a fellow named Steve Carroll. And I didn't even audition him. I put an ad in the trade papers, a broadcasting magazine, and the first guy that called me about the ad, I said, "You're hired." I didn't want to work 4 to 8, but he worked out very well. And we're still friends today. He lives about 40 miles from me.
Tell me about some of the other things you did at WTMA besides the morning show and the Hound Dog show. You had some other features too as well, right?
Well, yeah, I did. I did a lot of commercials, but there's another thing that used to be a pier. I don't know if it's still there in Folly Beach called the Folly Beach Pier. Is that still around?
They have rebuilt it. It burned down and they rebuilt it.
I rented that pier for the summer, and we brought in all the big artists. I was in there with a partnership with a fellow named Harry Janaris. He may still be around. Had an advertising agency there. We did pretty well at that pier. I had that for the whole season. We brought in, you know, people like Pat Boone and Connie Francis and those people. Of course, she wasn't as big a star then as she is now, but Pat Boone was, and we brought in a lot of the kind of music we played then were Gogi Grant, Jerry Vale. You know, that's what we were playing. I guess you'd call it sort of square music today. But that's what was on. But I played a lot of novelty stuff. I played a lot of Spike Jones and these kind of records, off the beaten track. And I did a lot of voices, had a lot of characters, had a soap opera there. And there was a fella that wrote a column for the newspaper. It was called the News Courier then. And I think he used the name of the Two Rivers. I think he called
Ashley himself. Cooper, yes.
Ashley Cooper, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I used to call him Cooper Ashley. And we had a big feud. And it benefited me because when I first came there, I started blasting his column. And then he started writing about me in the column. So we had a running feud going at that time. I just loved it. It mattered not when I worked. You know, work at night, daytime, it didn't make any difference. But I learned a lot there. I learned a lot from Chuck Smith, and I think he's passed on, but I learned a lot from him. And I worked over at Channel 2 for a while, not on staff, but there was a furniture store there named J.O. Goldberg. The son was Sonny Goldberg. I guess people may still remember him. And we started a commercial where he would come in and sing two lines of one of the top songs of the day. And, of course, he couldn't sing, and he would sing worse than he could anyway. And he would sing two lines of this song, and it was terrible. And then he would say, my father, J.L. Goldberg, says I better stop wasting his money singing and start telling you about our furniture. And he would go on with that, and it became a very, very big thing. People would call up and say, get that guy off the air. He is horrible. He has no business singing. And they would walk into the store, and he would end a commercial saying, come in and see me at our furniture store, and I'll sing a song for you. And we wrote a song called Serenade of the King Street Singer, and we had sheet music printed up, 1,000 of them, and I think he gave almost everyone away in about 4 days. I guess most of the pianos in the homes in that area all had the music of the King Street Singer on there. People were playing it and singing it. It was really funny. And he would come out to some record ops with me and actually try to sing, and they'd boo him off, but it was all a commercial.
Great for business, I bet.
Oh, yeah, it was terrific. It really was. But people used to call up and really scream. I mean, you know, if you play it straight, they go along with you, and a lot of them thought it was for real that he was really trying to sing. And whatever the number one or number two song was those days, that's what he would try to sing, and it was really horrible. One of the memories I had was he used to travel with the Cooper River High School or North Charleston High School, I forget what it was, called the Blue Devils, and we'd go to Conway and Monk's Corner and all these different areas, and one time we went to Somerville to play Somerville. I was out there. We used to just have like a bingo table and set up right at the field the remote equipment, and I was doing the first quarter in a thunderstorm. Rain, you couldn't see anything. It was all mud and slosh, and one of the guys from the station came out after the first quarter and said, you're not on the air. And I said, when did we go off? He said, you never were on. And did the whole first quarter into a dead microphone in the rain. So you learn those things, you know.
Oh, yeah. Always make sure you're on the air before you start talking.
Right. But I just had a ball in Charleston. I really did. I guess, you know, it was a development period for me. I really developed sort of a style there, and that followed me through. But that was never my first radio job. Boy, I started in Danville, Virginia, and then went to Salisbury, Maryland, Fairmont, West Virginia. You know, when I left TMA, well, I was in Cleveland before that, but when I left TMA, I went to Baltimore. And I was there about 6 or 7 years doing a morning show there.
Now, why did you leave WTMA for that job? Was it just a lot of money, or you had a disagreement with the owner? Or?
It wasn't the money, but when I was a kid in high school, grew up in Baltimore, they put a new station on called WITH. And in those days, it's hard to realize it now, but in those days, every station had a network. NBC, ABC, NBC had two networks, the red and the blue. One station was the blue, one station was red. That blue is now ABC. But they had a network. And they had, you know, Eddie Cantor, Jack Benny, Red Skelton, these kind of people, Burns and Allen. And if you didn't have a network, you really couldn't be on because there was nothing to do. And this station in 1941 signed on. I was in high school. And they said they were going to play records all day and give news on the hour. And nobody ever did that because the news came on at 6 o'clock at night from the networks. And the newspaper said, you know, they're going to wear out a lot of needles playing records all day, because we're talking 78 records now, and these individual needles, it would play 8 or 9 records, then you'd throw it away and put another steel needle in there. And this station went on the air, and I thought they were just terrific, and I was 16, 17 years old, so I went down there, and I told them, just before they signed on, I said, I know that you can't get any announcers, because all the announcers are working here. So, you know, I'll be glad to come down here and work for you after school. And they said, well, first of all, we're bringing announcers in from Chicago and from Dallas. And that, of course, that stunned me. And I said, and they said that you can't work here. We couldn't listen to you unless you have like 10 years experience. Nowadays, I guess it doesn't take that. But in those days, it did. You had to work in a small, small town if you could even get a job there and carry coffee for the announcers and stuff and eventually get a little job on Saturday. Maybe have somebody doesn't show up, get an hour, and then get your own show and eventually move on to a larger station. It took me, I was just trying to get to WITH all my life. And when I was at these little stations in Virginia and West Virginia, I kept writing them letters. And they said, no, you need more experience. They didn't even hear me. You need more experience. You need more experience. Finally, they hired me in 1945 after about a year and a half. And I went in there and they said they had bought a station in Richmond and they were putting a station on in Richmond and they're going to do the same kind of broadcasting that they did in Baltimore. And they brought in 8 of us to train us. Said, you'll work here in Baltimore for a month and then go down to Richmond. And I thought that was terrific. So I'm on the air with these guys that I was dreaming about. And I was just 18 years old. And they came in after 2 weeks and called a meeting and said that they're bringing the manager over from one of the big stations in Richmond. And he's bringing a lot of the sales accounts with him. So that's great news. We'll be in the black before we start. We all applauded. Then he said, I also have some bad news. That's the first time I'd ever heard good news, bad news. The bad news is that he's bringing his own staff. And we don't need any of you people. So there's a week's salary waiting at the bookkeeper's desk, and I have a meeting. And he went out. And one of the guys, I still remember his name, Jim Fair, he was going to be the program director down there. He says, I just bought a house in Richmond. So it was really a crushing thing. And I said to myself, one day they're going to want me at this radio station. And I finally wound up at TMA. And in 1957, there was a full-page ad in Broadcasting Magazine that WITH was looking for a personality-type morning man. And I said, I'm not going to leave here. I'm happy, but I'm going to send them a tape anyway. Those days we had reel-to-reel tape. And I sent a tape. And they called me and said, you know, that they wanted to fly me up for an audition. They've got like 100 people they're considering. They want to fly me up. So I told the guy, I said, you know, I just sent that tape to find out if I could really work at WITH, but I'm really not interested. I'm very happy here in Charleston. And I said, I'm really not interested, but I just wanted to find out. So he thanked me. And about 2 hours later, he called back and said, you know, you really ought to come up. And they told me the salary, and it was the same thing I was making in Charleston. And I said, you know, I'm not interested. I said, first of all, I don't need any heat here. I don't need any overcoat. I don't need any of that stuff. I don't need chains on my car tires. And I said, I'm very happy. Well, they called 2 or 3 times, and I went up, and I did audition, and I got the job. And I didn't even want it at the time, but I got it, and I decided to go ahead and take the plunge into the big city, and I went there. And, of course, I was really happy there. In Baltimore, about 12 years after that, but 7 with that station.